guys know how to connect with you about Boston sports.
Say that more slowly because I'm stupid.
Felger and Maz on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
We really don't need to be popular. We need to win.
Does it make him more popular, and does it help make him more of a winner? Debatable. Debatable. The Felger and Maz show, I think it's a consensus on the program. We're not high on the signing. Which is odd because every single person that covers the team, Maz, seems to be high on the signing. This is one of these things that just my antenna goes up as well. Is there one person that covers the team that's going to say, I don't like it for any reason? It could be our reasons. It could be their reasons. Like, every single person that I've seen that covers the team endorses this signing. I can't stand that. What, 20 for 20, all 20 guys or however many there are, there's not a single voice of dissent. Well, I can't stand that.
Well, look, and you should despise that for lots of reasons, because this one above all of them shouldn't be. First of all, nothing should be that much of a slam dunk, let alone a 30-year-old guy who hasn't exactly had a consistent track record when it comes to power production. Now, again, look, you can say all you want. Well, you know, 2 years ago when he was healthy, he hit 38 or whatever it was. This year was 45. What about those years in between? And what about the history of spending? And what about this whole idea that, you know, the free agent market doesn't work, which they've preached in the past? It's like, now look, in the case of this particular signing, this thing has been rumored for so long that in my mind, it was like the least dramatic outcome possible. We all knew this was coming. I was hoping that they would walk away, but they didn't. They didn't pull any offer off the table. They wanted the player, clearly. To me, they were going to get the player. I just don't know exactly what the player is. And I am astounded that so many people look at this guy and say, 45 home runs, they have their power hitter. How do we know that? I'm not sold on this guy as being what he appears to be.
Do you like the signing, Tom? And Tom on Cape Cod. Do you like the signing?
Good afternoon, gentlemen. I do not like the signing, and all those guys that cover the team who are endorsing it should be drawn and quartered, honestly, because it is borderline frightening that we did this deal essentially for the sake of doing a deal. Because you know, Felger, something you said several weeks ago has stuck with me, and it's your point about free agents and how they pan out versus acquisitions, you know, versus guys that you trade for. They seem to not, you know, whether it's just Boston or what have you, they just don't seem to pan out. But the bottom line is that you're the Boston effing Red Sox, and you should not be making deals just to drum up some excitement. But Maz, I'm curious to get your thoughts on the possible return for Mookie Betts. It doesn't seem like he wants to play in this town for this ball club. He's the most valuable player on the
team.
Hey, Tom.
Let me stop you on that, because that's just taking us down a whole nother road. Are they going to trade Mookie Betts this year, Maz?
No, they're not. Mookie Betts is
staying. So let's talk about that another time. Do you think that they made this Martinez move just to drum up excitement?
No, because I don't think this does that for him. I think that they went after...
I agree.
To me, you could argue they did that for Stanton, if they had done that at the time, because that, again, Stanton to me is a rock star. He's a guy that would have come in and completely changed the whole sort of buzz and vibe around the team, because that's a guy that you will not leave your seat when he comes up. I can't say that for J.D. Martinez. To me, what J.D. Martinez for them was the best available option for lots of reasons. One, they didn't have to give up young talent from their system, which, frankly, they don't have anyway. And two, because he was traded in the middle of the season, there's no draft compensation for him. He's an easy free agent for them to sign, on top of the fact that he's got an opt-out after 2 years. Perfect. Great. It's a nice, easy signing. Again, I don't have a huge problem with the contract, Mike. This isn't about the contract. It's about the player. So you want to say that there's no huge risk here? Fine, I'll even grant you that. Maybe there's not a huge risk here. I just don't know that he's really going to change what they're capable of.
Kevin at UMass on the Malcolm Butler situation. Hi, Kevin.
So, Mike, I know you're quick to say Belichick didn't sacrifice Super Bowl win for his ego, but in 51, heading into 52, losing their last four Super Bowls, is Bill benching Butler?
If Bill hasn't built up all this cachet, is he acting the way he's acting? No, categorically not. If Bill hadn't won 5 Super Bowls, he's picking up the phone from Cleveland on Jimmy Garoppolo. He's not just handing him to a friend and taking care of him because he likes the kid. He's not operating the way he operates. Of course, Bill has built up so much cachet and currency, and it's deserved. But you sort of wonder if it's wandering in just to a little bit of abuse of power sort of thing, Maz, where he's just got he has such carte blanche because he's just accomplished so much that has it gone too far and is he abusing it a little bit? You know, where are the checks and balances? Where is someone to say, Bill, you can't bury this kid all game? Or, Bill, why don't we call around the league and see what we can get for this guy? Like, I think that that's a fair question.
I think it's totally a fair question. Again, like, look, we're all a product of the events leading up to something. So he's no different. And you know, was he feeling his oats after all these titles and getting a five and, you know, going to seven Super Bowls with Brady and puffing his chest out? Absolutely. But to me, still no excuse. Like, Bill Belichick, of all people, who preaches, stay in the moment. You know, play this play, play this game. Do like all of a sudden he's the one saying, "Ah, I don't need this guy. I'm going to screw him over. I'm going to make an example out of this guy." Like what? Just what bad judgment? And again, you want to sit him for the beginning of the game? Fine, sit him for the beginning of the game. Whatever. I think it was dumb to have Gilmore cover anyone but Jeffrey at the beginning of the game of that game, but whatever. Belichick's put together a million more game plans than I will ever even think about. Once the game was going the way it was going, Jordan Richards, Johnson Batamosi, those guys really deserve to be on the field more than Malcolm Butler.
Brutal. Jim and Beverly, hi, what do you got?
Hey, guys. Hey, on the Martinez trade, I like the trade. Don't get me wrong. I wanted Stanton as much as Maz did, and why they didn't go after him, I don't know. But this guy was the only thing out there. And after listening to that asshat Henry yesterday, I'm thinking, oh, my God, they're not going to do this. They're not going to go after this guy. I mean, Fenway's, it's a friendly ballpark for home runners. If this guy hits 30 or 35 and that pushes Manny even more, I don't know. I mean, that could be 60, 70 homers there between the two of them.
Okay, I don't know how that specifically pushes Hanley. What's going to push Hanley is if he has a certain amount of plate appearances, he vests and gets another guaranteed year at $22 million. That's his motivation. But again, he raises a point about Henry. Jimmy, why don't you pop up one of these cuts? They're so hard to hear. I'm reluctant to play him because he's such a low talker to begin with. And he wasn't properly mic'd or whatever. I just didn't sound great. But why don't you play Henry number three? Henry number three, how happy he was with this roster yesterday.
We are very happy with our roster. I think we do have the highest payroll in baseball, and again, we're defending American League East champions, and I feel like that we've done what we needed to do to improve this team.
Okay, so did you guys feel the same way when he was saying that? And again, can someone put a mic on the guy? It's not like he actually got a booming voice. Like, you know,
I think we need a different approach. I
mean, put the mic on the guy, for God's sakes. You can't hear him even on a good day. But when he was saying that stuff, did you think that, that they weren't going to do anything?
No, I didn't. See, I felt that Martinez was coming. I think I told you this. I wanted them to pull the offer, but I think you asked me at one point, several points, you know, do you think they're going to get him? Yep, I do. And I think I even said to you at the beginning of last week, he'll be signed inside of 10 days. By the end of this week, he'll be signed because then it comes to nut-cutting time. Now you're getting close to game starting, and all of a sudden you got a month to go until opening day, and you could use about a month. That's what you need. So I'm not the least bit surprised that he's here. I thought he was going to end up here all along.
See, I thought they had tightened up in terms of the wallet and the spending this season, so I was a little surprised when this deal ended up coming down, especially after him sitting at the park bench yesterday. Say,
I'm pretty happy about the team and where we are right now. No one comes near me unless it's Linda. You hear me?
Is that what he's a bad germphobe? He's worse than I, from what I understand. He's as bad as I am.
No one's
maybe it's just that. They don't get anywhere near him with your filthy microphones. So, Jimmy, how about number two? John Henry number two. I want you to weigh in, Maz, on this whole thing about the approach. Are they gonna get more home runs because they're now gonna have an uppercut swing or whatever the hell? Number two, Jimmy.
I think that we'd have more power if we would have had significant power last year if we didn't have a different approach. And that's, you know, my opinion. It may not be true, but I think that we have a very good offense.
Murray, what does that sound like again?
If there's one thing I know about, it's aggressive. It's being aggressive at the plate. That no good son of a bitch, Chili Davis. He didn't get those guys ready. I might not know, but that's what I feel.
And what the hell is he talking about? How all those guys that have now been fired? And look, John Farrell's a boob, but way to throw him and Chili Davis and the rest of these guys are all gone under a bus. What was the issue last year? How about trying to fix it last year? Now that was the thing. They weren't aggressive enough at the plate. What, really? And what the hell does he know about hitting?
No, I do. I love the fact now that Chili Davis was the problem. Yeah. Let's blame the hitting coach for crying out. Now, look, we had this discussion last year. I think their approach last year sucked. I did, but I think that it sucked for different reasons than John Henry does. He thinks they should have been trying to jack the ball more. I thought they were easy outs oftentimes because they were trying to jack everything they shouldn't necessarily jack. And by that, I mean, you know, guys like Betts trying to pull balls on the outside part of the plate, and now they become easy outs on top of it.
Let's not forget, we were also really aggressive on the base paths, too. That kind of caught up with us.
I mean, look, the bottom line.
The first things first, put a mic on the guy. God, good Lord.
It would be nice to hear him.
That Chili Davis, he
sucked. I don't know, maybe we should do the Felger Maz show this way. Right?
Like, keep your damn dirty hands off of me.
I think maybe we should just, maybe this is a better way. What does they say? You want to get someone's attention? You should whisper.
No one's coming near me with that lav microphone. Don't you trust me?
I kind of like this. This is pretty good.
Speaking of ridiculous things, guess who actually recruited J.D. Martinez to Boston? We'll give you that story right after this.
Felger and Maz, the Sports Hub. This is Felger and Maz.
I'm a sports dork now.
That guy is a hack.
Felger and Maz on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
J.D. Martinez is going into his age 30 season. He is a late bloomer, turning himself into a top-flight hitter when he was 26, already released by the Houston Astros. But check out the slash line over the last 4 years. A 300 batting average, 362 on base, and a whopping 574 slugging percentage. This is a monster. In fact, just hitting, J.D. Martinez has been, at bat for at bat, among the five best hitters in baseball. It goes Trout, Votto, Stanton, and then tied for fourth, Martinez and Paul Goldschmidt.
If you read Bob Nightingale on USA Today, the guy that got him here was none other than David Price. Before I start reading the story, Maz, just what's your initial reaction to that?
Oh, please, I don't buy that for a second. Like, you know, that just, you know, now Price played with him and everything, but he's miserable here. There's no way that was the reason he came.
Okay, Price and Martinez, according to Bob Nightingale, former teammates for parts of two seasons in Detroit, spoke several times during the winter about the possibility of Martinez signing with the Red Sox. They talked extensively just the other day. Martinez had questions. Price provided answers. Simply, writes Nightingale, Martinez wanted to know if he could be happy playing in Boston, the biggest fishbowl in baseball, where negativity thrives and the weak get swallowed like guppies. Where else could you have a team win 93 games in back-to-back seasons with two consecutive AL East Division titles over the New York Yankees and still be hated by the populace? Yet, instead of telling Martinez to run back to the desert in Arizona or even sitting out until some other team came along, Price gave him the lay of the land and what makes playing in Boston dramatically different. Quote, "It's tough here," Price tells USA Today. "There's just so much more negativity. I've never been one for negative stuff. I like surrounding myself by positive people. Even if my wife starts talking negatively, I let her know. I just can't stand it." You want to weigh in, Murray, on any of this, by the way?
You need to shut your trap, woman. This house is a safe space. All I want is positive attitudes and positive words, a little bit of Overwatch, my mother-in-law, and Astro.
Price says that, "I can remember Vanderbilt coach Tim Corbin is always preaching that positive word, positive vibe, positive environment. I feel like I'm the same way. I try to find the positive in everything. Sometimes," he says, "that's tough." Still, writes Nightingale, Price told Martinez to come to Boston, where they can be teammates again and win a World Series. And who knows, maybe Price can find peace and happiness once again. So, you know what scares me, Maz? Is the whole opt-out thing. I mean, if this is true, if he's telling Martinez to come here, then he can't bolt a year later. He couldn't do that, could he?
Sure he could. Of course he could. Now, look, I don't think the chances are great just because of the way the market's going. And, you know, I told you, I think Price had a epiphany of sorts during the offseason. And I think someone went to him and said, hey, look, you know, the market is going bad. You had an elbow issue last year. You're not going to hit the free agent market again next winter and get the same money back. So I would prepare for 5 years in Boston. And I'm willing to bet that this whole thing, I told him to come anyway, is a further attempt to make his life more, calmer, or his life more palatable in Boston so that he can endure the 5 years.
See, I don't know. See, you didn't touch on what I think is the key line from Price in this piece that shows me he's still an oversensitive mental case. Here's the quote. Price told Bob Nightingale of USA Today, and trying to get Martinez here, he'll get booed. I told JD he will love the guys here in this clubhouse, but also told him he'll get booed. He's a quiet, soft-spoken guy, but he'll handle it. Besides, everyone gets booed. I heard Big Poppy get booed many times in Fenway. End quote. David Ortiz got booed many times in Fenway? What? You're just making that up. That's patently false. Since David Price has been a member of this team, maybe go back to, maybe at points early in 15, maybe a little bit, but people did not boo David Ortiz, quote, many times. He's full of it. He's still stuck in his head. He's still stuck in the misery of being here.
So, no question. Right. There was a time when Ortiz was almost released. There may have been, times there, but not since Price has gotten here. No way.
And then he contradicts himself by saying, later in this thing, I don't want to surround myself with negativity. But on the one hand, you're saying how negative it is here, and you're automatically going to get booed, JD. You know what's happening, because these people are awful. They're awful people.
They're so full of hate and vitriol. But no. I don't like to be surrounded by that kind of negativity.
He's full of it.
He says, Murray, that it will be, Nightingale writes, it will be a different David Price in 2018, a much more private, even an introverted David Price. Price came to Boston 2 years ago as one of the most charismatic and outgoing players in the sport. With 1.8 million Twitter followers, yes, I'm sorry?
That's a crook.
Charismatic.
Please.
Yeah, if he's going to be more introverted, he's not off to a great start, but keep going.
1.8 million Twitter followers, but now has virtually retired from social media, refusing to let it suffocate his essence. Whoa, wow, what a line. Refusing to let it suffocate his essence. Quote, I rarely get on social media anymore, Price said. There's nothing but negativity. That's all it is. I can tweet out John 3:16, a Bible verse, and I'm going to get crushed. There's no point. No point. I used to really enjoy it, especially Twitter, interacting with everybody. I thought that was the coolest thing ever. I really enjoyed it. Now I go weeks without even opening Twitter. I can't remember the last time I read mentions or used Twitter for anything. I definitely miss it. I miss the interactions with the fans, but I'm okay with it. Oh, brother.
I think we have a solution here. He can have my account.
That's unbelievable.
Because I can't stand the interaction in the mentions. I can't stand it. But so if he wants my account, he can have it. I think we have an answer.
All right, so there's that. More of your thoughts here on the lines. Here's Jay and Shirley. What do you got? What do you think of the Martinez signing, Jay?
I think it's pretty good. First off, thanks for the taking the call. Awesome show as usual. I think that the opt-out clause after year two kind of makes it. And I know people have been calling and saying, they're for it or against it, but I think Matt's kind of nailed it. That's kind of the big thing. Now, I feel that he wanted a huge contract this offseason, didn't get it, ended up, quote-unquote, settling for coming here after all the nonsense. If he's got an opt-out clause after two, why is he not motivated to come here and hit, 312 and 45 and 120 RBIs a year for the next 2 years so that he can opt out and get the contract he was looking for? But even
he does. He should, Jay. I'm just going to cut you off. Except then he's going to be 32 going on 33, and what's the market going to look like? Feels like the market's trending down, and so I understand if he lights it up, he can opt out, but I'm not sure what's going to be there for him, Maz. I think you're stuck with this guy for 5 years. Really do.
Well, in all probability, that's what's going to happen, because if no one's willing to give a 30-year-old a five-year contract, are they going to give, as you said? Yeah, it's he's going to have to pound the crap out of the ball to get his money if he wants a bigger contract somewhere else. And the game's trending younger. Every sport's trending younger.
Lance in Detroit. Hi, Lance.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good.
Hey, you guys are completely lost on JD Martinez. I'm telling you.
I live in Detroit. You guys are calling him a fraud and a fluke. Listen, I watched him here for 4 years. He's nothing but an absolute stud. And Maz is completely wrong about Comerica Park. His numbers would have been even greater. Comerica is one of the worst hitting parks in the league. It's 420 to Death Center, and right center is Death Valley. And I guarantee you he's going to be an absolute stud for the Red Sox.
Okay, I hope you're right. Maz, how was Detroit's return when they traded Martinez to Arizona? Did they get a good return or just sort of a middling package?
So I don't remember. I don't remember what they got in that trade. I mean,
I read it, but I don't recognize any of the names. Like, I mean, I couldn't. I don't know. Like, did they? Because again, the thing, what scares me the most is his profile. 4 years ago, he's released. He signed off the scrap heap by Dombrowski and then sent to the minors. Hits well in the minors, comes up, and then hits well in Detroit and sticks in Detroit. But after the 1 year in Detroit, he only gets 1 year and $3 million. He goes to arbitration, gets 1 year, $3 million. Has another decent year, and so they sign him for two at something like $9 a year, something like that. And then they trade him. And I know they're in a rebuild, but it's like he's released from Houston, who seems like a pretty good judge of talent to me. I don't know. So it's four teams in 4 years. He's not really had a big contract. He goes to Arizona, hits 29 home runs in 62 games. That still, to me, is it's great production, but it's a number that scares me the most. 29 home runs in 62 games. And again, that park, they have to now bring in a humidor to moisten the baseballs, to moisten the balls, because they're so dry and hard in Arizona that they fly out of the park like it does in Coors Field. There's two places in the majors that are now going to do this, Coors Field and Chase Field, or whatever they call it, in Arizona. Because of the weather, the desert, the balls dry out so much, they're like hitting golf balls. So they have to bring in a humidor to moisten the balls, which just, I don't know. So he goes there, hits 29 home runs in 62 games in a place where there's goofy conditions. He's going to turn 31 during the year. I just add that all up and go, that doesn't really work very often.
Yeah, again, I told you, I have my doubts about the player. It's not the contract. I look at the whole thing with J.D. Martinez and I say, because to me, the Red Sox need a guy who's going to change their lineup. They don't just need another guy who's going to hit 25 homers and lengthen the lineup. I don't think that does it for him. They need somebody that's going to step in the box and a pitcher says, I have to be really careful how I pitch this guy because no matter where I put it, he can hit it out of the ballpark. And I disagree with the caller. The caller says, right center in Comerica Park is Death Valley. To me, that's approaching more center field. It's not right center. Okay, so I look at right field in Comerica Park, and I think that's reachable for a right-handed batter who's got power. I think Fenway's a different animal when it comes to that. So we'll see. But again, I've said from the beginning, if this guy can do that, if this guy can drive the ball out of the ballpark to all fields in Boston, fine. The Red Sox will be right. He will change their lineup. No two ways about it. I'm just not sure he's that guy. And I love hearing from Red Sox fans who tell me that he is, when the reality is that you haven't watched him play every day. We won't know until we see him play every day. On paper, it looks good.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub. This is Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Looking through items on what amounts to a pretty massive re-entry Monday. Big Patriots, Red Sox news over the weekend. Also have a Bruins trade today. A little movement on the Malcolm Butler story as well, which in fact is where we'll start this segment. It's what Mike in Maine wants to talk about. Mike in Maine comes to us on line 5. Hi, Mike. What do you got?
Hey, guys. Thanks. First thing, thank you guys for getting on Belichick and making him. I hope somebody's going to hold him accountable. And I know that's probably higher up. And I hope somebody, because there were some bad decisions made in that game. Number two, real quick, I really like what Hanley Ramirez going. I know I'm going to be all over, but watch Hanley Ramirez this year. He's got a little swagger back. He's got a little confidence back. I know he said he's going to play 150 games at first. That made me laugh. And I think we're going to watch them. Number three is, I think we paid a little too much money for what could be a glorified DH. I don't know much about Martinez in the field. I know he can swing the bat. He's got a 285 lifetime average right now, and I think the guy can hit. I think it's a huge
question. Just let me stop you right there. Maz, how does the lineup and the, you know, where everyone plays, how does that all shake out?
I'm not sure. I want to see how this goes because, again, my guess, they didn't acquire J.D. Martinez to bat him sixth. Okay, so he's going to hit third or fourth, I think. And Alex Cora indicated today that Hanley was going to hit third, so which puts him at first base, and J.D. Martinez hitting fourth. But I'll tell you what I love. I do think if there is a ripple effect from this, that the Red Sox are now guarded from Hanley. And when I mean that, if Hanley shuts it down, or Hanley sucks, or Hanley doesn't want to play, then at least they have a right-handed bat, or at least a second one, that should be in the lineup all the time and should help them in some capacity. So that part is true. I don't know what J.D. Martinez is going to be in terms of 45 home runs, but he does give them some protection for Hanley going AWOL on him in one way, shape, or form. The reason I say that is, before someone else says to me, Hanley in a contract year, okay? You know what Hanley did the last time he hit free agency? He played in 128 games. He hit 13 homers and had 70 RBI. And the Red Sox gave him 4 years and $88 million, okay, with the chance to be 5-110. So I don't think the typical player, you would say, well, it's a free agent year, he'll be motivated. Now, I don't think those rules apply to Hanley. Just my 2 cents.
Alan in Florida, what's your reaction to the J.D. Martinez signing?
Well, of course, I disagree completely with Maz. First of all, by the way, there was one thing that it wasn't Chili Davis, and it wasn't even Farrell. It was a guy by the name of David Ortiz. The players even admit that. I mean, now, I'll tell you what, Maz, we made a little wager last year. I'm going to take over 35 home runs. Want to bet another 500 for charity?
Let me think about it.
Oh, you can think about it. Okay. And Comerica Park, by the way, is a lousy hitter ballpark. I don't care what you say.
Okay.
And I watch all the Red Sox games. I watched them play. I mean, this guy's going to hit 40 home runs. If you don't think that this is going to change the lineup around, then I don't know what to say. Not just going to lengthen it. I mean, this guy's good. Yeah, they didn't get Stanton. So what should we do? Kill ourselves and not go out? Like you said, not get any players this year and just sit there and have a boring season? This guy is going to change everything. He is a legitimate home run hitter. Plus, he hits for average. And plus, he can play the field if he has to. And you're just negative. It's just an absolute thing. With you're negative. If they got Babe Ruth, you would have something wrong with him. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Mass?
No, it's look, I told you, he might end up being the right guy. I just told you, I'm not convinced based on 1 year that all of a sudden J.D. Martinez is the guy that's going to come in and alter the lineup. And that's the only way I can put it. So on paper, sure, yeah, if he hits 45 home runs, no question. He's done that once. He's hit over 30 twice. He's 30 years old. I don't think he's getting better still. I think he's reached his ceiling. He's already had his career years. And just so we're all on the same page, Comerica Park last year produced the fourth most runs in the big leagues. Okay? So I keep hearing people tell me that it's not a hitter's park. It wasn't a hitter's park when it was built. They changed it. It became more of a hitter's park. And in terms of home runs, eighth most in the game. Okay, eighth most in the game in Comerica Park.
Third most hits in Major League Baseball last year, Tony.
So look, if you think I'm making this all up, you can find I'm making it all up. I'm just trying to give you the actual reality of it. Okay,
yeah, but I'll tell you what. Compared to Arizona to me is the outlier. When you need to bring in a humidor to moisten your balls, then I'm sorry. That's an entirely different situation. Dave in the car on the Butler story. Hi, Dave.
The only thing that really, you know, remotely makes sense to me is that it was a Belichick ego thing, and where that he was like, regarding the contract, I made you in that one Super Bowl, and I'm going to ruin you in this Super Bowl. Because none of that other stuff makes sense. Rowe not knowing to the last minute, McCourty saying, oh, everybody knew all along. I mean, nothing else that would have been like, oh, well, we're going to go in a different direction. You would have thought they would have been better prepared. And even if it was like a last minute thing right before the Super Bowl where he punched Stephen Belichick, you would think that, you know, his comments after the game, meaning Butler's, wouldn't be like, oh, well, you know, I don't know, they gave up on me. Like, you wouldn't even think he would be saying a word, and no one would be getting behind him because some of these guys would know what the hell went on.
I don't think anything major happened. I mean, I'm more and more convinced of it. I think there might have been a little something right before the game that where they weren't going to start him, but he was in the rotation, and something was said before the game where Bill said, well, screw him all together. Now he's not even going to get off the bench. I mean, that to me feels like the only thing that makes any halfway sense. It's still wrong. It's still ridiculous on Belichick's part. But like that, at least you can connect a dot. The thing with the contract, people have taken that too far. It's not like I've said it that, you know, when you, that's how you really get on their bad side, is to bust their balls on a contract, which is true. It ends poorly for almost all of those guys. But it's not like Bill said, you fought me on a contract, I'm sitting you. That's not the way that worked. It was Butler got on his bad side over the last 2 years on the contract. It's what started the slide. It's what started the decline in the relationship, was the contract. And from there, I think they both made it worse. I mean, Butler's not absolved from blame here. He played worse. He, from what you hear from behind the scenes, he wasn't, again, a great pro, showing up late, having to be carted around. They had to worry about him. Maybe his off-field stuff. There's just little things about him that went in the wrong direction. And Bill and the team, as they do, tended to hold it against him. And it all just sort of built up, and then whatever what was said right before the game, Bill went too far. He overreacted, and it cost him the game. Our long commercial-free segment is next. Don't go anywhere.
This is Felger and Mazz on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Felger and Mazz.
They're more scared of you than you are of them.
98.5, the Sports Hub. Sports Hub. Sports Hub.
Sports Hub. Sports Hub. Sports Hub. High slot now, Brody. Try to return it for Gaudreau. Might have a breakaway for Marchand. He'll barrel into the slot. Forehand. Backhand. He scores! Brad Marchand, from about 130 feet in, came in on a breakaway and then drew Rittich out and shoveled it five-hole for the game winner. The Boston Bruins record a 2-1 overtime victory here at the Saddle Dome, their first victory on this five-game road trip.
It's just the timing of it, the spot. You know, we all expect them to come back to earth, and they just won't. They just won't. They get thrashed the other night in Vancouver. Now they've got a game 2 days later against Calgary, who they beat last week in a real good game at the Garden. A good Calgary team that's at home. And I know Calgary's been bad at home, but otherwise, it's a Monday afternoon, funky afternoon start time out west. The Bruins in the middle of a West Coast Canada trip where they should really be falling back to earth and just giving some games back. It's just the ebb and flow of the season. And they just won't do it. They just won't do it. They come out and they're great in the first period. They give up a goal on the power play in the second, and that sort of evens the game. And from there, Rask is amazing. Rask steals you a game, and they take 2 points out of it in a game that I think we're all just sort of expecting it to start sliding back to earth, and they just won't. And so I find that impressive. I found that an impressive win yesterday. Overtime win. It wasn't a regulation win. And there's the game winner from Brad Marchand. But I just, the team continues to impress me because I keep expecting them, you know, for the bubble to burst, and it won't. And so that's one. And then two, they started making moves today. They make a trade. The defenseman's name is Nick Holden. He is a left-shot 30-year-old defenseman from the Rangers. He played behind McDonough, if you will, with the Rangers. To get him, the Bruins give up a third-round pick and Rob O'Gara, who is a system defenseman for them. I think O'Gara started the year with the Bruins last year and has been mostly a Providence player since. He's a system player and a younger defenseman. I don't know if he really projected up here with the Boston Bruins, maybe a depth organization guy, but still a young piece. And so when you give up a third-round pick and a young defenseman like Rob O'Gara, you're making that trade, and this guy's a rental. He's up at the end of the year. You're doing it so the guy plays. And this is what I'm telling you. You may not have heard of Nick Holden. I'm not super familiar with the player. But you don't trade a third-round pick and a guy like Rob O'Gara for a veteran to come here and sit on the ninth floor or to play behind Matt Greslick. I just don't. If you're getting this guy to be depth for Matt Greslick in case he gets hurt, then that's a stupid. Then that's stupid to give up a third round pick. This guy's going to play. He should play. And as I told you before, you'll know the trade's a real winner if Holden plays on your second pair, because he has that ability. He's a 20 minute a night guy, which means you're basically a top four defenseman in this league. And if he slots onto your top four, if he can play next to Carlo on the second pair, or maybe they reconnoiter it, Maz, where it's Chara and Carlo on a defensive shutdown pair, and then it's McAvoy and this Holden kid. If that's the way it shakes out, then you've won the trade, because that means Krug goes back to being a third-pairing guy, which is what he should be, a specialist, a power play guy, which is what he should be. And I think that's just all slots better. If this guy's playing behind Matt Greslick, or if he's on the ninth floor, then this thing was useless. It was a bad trade.
Well, I think my guess is he ends up on the second pairing. When you look at the minutes, that's probably the place he goes. Yeah, he ends up playing with Carlo. They bump down Krug, and Greslick becomes what he really should have been in the first place, which is a depth guy. And then on top of it, you have McQuaid as a depth guy on top of it if Miller's on the right side with Krug. So, look, you know, to me, they needed a left-shot defenseman. That this guy fits what they need in the short term. Long term, you know, you got Lozon and whoever else down in the minors still, and you worry about that. You know, you cross that bridge when you get there. I still think they could use a right wing. If I'm Sweeney, I don't stop here. If you can get a right wing at a reasonable price, you do that too.
No question. I think they had to get bigger on the left side. Right now, it's Chara, Krug, Grzelcyk, and Krug and Grzelcyk are too similar. They're smaller left-shot guys, offensive guys, and it's just you get these playoff series and guys start leaning on you in front of the net and everything's a scrum. You need more size. And this Holden is 6'4", 215, like more classic, good-sized defenseman. So they're investing in this team. They're investing in this run, and they should. They should. I think the Bruins continue to show you something on a nightly basis. I asked someone in the league who should know, you know, just for a scouting report on this guy, on Nick Holden. This is what I got back. Not a top four, in my opinion, says this guy, but can spot in. He's big and fairly mobile. They need a depth on the left side in case of injury. So, again, I hope this is more than a depth piece, because if this is a depth piece and you've given up too much, that's too much to give up for just someone in case someone else gets hurt. So that's those are our Bruins thoughts. We're mostly on the Martinez and the Red Sox stuff. We also hit on those ridiculous improvements baseball introduced for pace of play with the limiting mound visits with a million different exceptions. We can weigh in on that as well. But let's bring it back here with Curtis. And, oh, I'm sorry, I think I hit Al in West Roxbury. Al, you're up first. What do you got for us?
Yeah, on the J.D. Martinez thing, where are they going to play him? I mean, who's out? Somebody got to be out.
Yeah, so Moreland feels like the odd man out there, Maz.
It does. It feels that way because everything that I read suggests that Martinez is going to be the DH, which means that if Hanley's going to play, it's going to have to be at first base. So it would not shock me if at Fenway Park they decide to put Martinez in left field from time to time. Again, you know, anybody can play out there. All you got to do, it goes over your head, just turn around. And that would mean maybe Bradley sitting, Benintendi plays center, something like that. I would not rule that out, but I think you're going to see... look, Martinez is going to be in the lineup every day. They didn't pick him up to do three guys for two spots or four for three spots or anything like that.
You don't think it's going to be... I'm sorry to cut you off, Mike, but yeah, I'm just... This thing at first base, you don't think it's going to be an even split with Moreland and Hanley? It's not like he's going to play that many games, and I'm sure they don't want him to vest that option.
No, I think that... look, I think if Hanley's hitting, they'll play him. But his
defense sucks.
Okay, but again, they played him there for a good chunk of the year in 2016, right? And he did okay.
Yeah, Ortiz kept him in check that year.
So, but even so, Murray, if Hanley can hit, they'll play Hanley at first. I'm okay with that. And then you put Moreland in for defensive reasons late. Like, there's lots of ways to figure that part out. I just don't think there's any prayer of Hanley staying interested and focused for 155 games. No shot.
Couple open lines if you want to grab them, folks. 617-779-0985. Curtis in Maine. Hi, Curtis.
Hey guys, how's it going? Thanks for taking my call.
Pleasure.
I agree with Maz in the fact of, you know, I don't believe it until I actually see it. You know, on paper it looks good, but we'll have to see how it shakes out. But outside of that, I really like the signings. I mean, you guys put up the stats earlier. From 2014 till 2017, last year, he's averaged just about 130 games played and 32 homers a year. You know, compared to what the Sox had last year for offense, you know, that's a definite upgrade. You know, if he hits around 300, hits 100 RBI, I mean, yeah, it's not Giancarlo Stanton and all that, but hey, you know, compared to what it was last year, I think it's a great upgrade, and, you know, you look for a bounce back from some of these other guys, and hopefully, you know, Sale can last a little longer. And
well, Curtis, let me just stop you there before you go too far. The game's played. Is he right on the game's played?
Oh, in terms of what, overall?
I mean, is this like he gave me a games played stat as if the guy's like that's a positive stat in his favor? Didn't Jimmy Stewart tell us he's never played more than 123 in a year?
No, I think he's played more than that in a season. I'll double check it.
119, 120, 158, 123, 86, 113, 53. That is from last season to the beginning of his career in 2011.
Okay, so the 53 was probably that a half year there, Jimmy. But, you know,
his first year.
Oh, I'm sorry. So you went backwards.
Yes.
So, I mean, so you tell me, is this a games played guy, Maz, or not?
No, based on his history, no. He played 158 a couple of years ago, though. So it's not like, you know, he has never done it. But I'm telling you, look, there have been a lot of little things with this guy, too, and maybe that's the logic on their part. I always think, though, the health thing is hard to predict with some guys unless they have chronic injuries. So he had some issues where I think he had a broken hand or a broken foot, something that feels like it was related to a contact injury. So, like, I'm always reluctant on those to get too predictive as far as a guy's injuries. My bigger concern is whether he can hit with regularity. That's what my for power.
You're listening to Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub.